KMXT in Kodiak. This is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, Sitka herring is being fished as a co-op this year. Foreign row technicians can once again get a visa to work the salmon season. And the sockeye forecast for Upper Cook Inlet appears to be deja vu all over again. All that. And what does it take to not blush when you hear the phrase fish balls? Coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Kodiak Area Native Association's Tobacco Prevention and Education Program. CANA believes everyone has the right to breathe smoke-free air. More information is available at 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
The 2015 Sitka Sound Sacro Herring Fishery opened up on Wednesday. Fishing started at 3:30 p.m. with the usual 10-second countdown from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's biologist Dave Gordon, who oversees the fishery.
Open. The Sitka Sound Sacro Fishery is now open.
Fish and Game opened up an area west of Crow and Gagarin Islands for 3 hours, closing the fishery at 6:30 Wednesday night. The opening was more relaxed than usual because the fleet is fishing as a co-op. Gordon estimated that Saners caught less than 1,000 tons of herring in the first opening. Two test samples Wednesday afternoon found high rates of mature roe, 11.5% and 13.1%. That's very good stuff, says Gordon. The threshold for market is usually around 10%. Fish and Game was expecting to open more waters, perhaps to the shoreline of Kruzoff Island, later in the week. A growing number of restaurant consumers and grocery store shoppers in the lower 48 are asking for Alaska's Copper River sockeye salmon by name, but the marketing effort that popularized the firm red fish could be in jeopardy as the commercial fishermen who fund it decide whether or not to keep supporting it. In 2005, the fleet of Prince William Sound drift fishermen voted to assess themselves a 1% tax to fund Alaska's first regional seafood development association. Setnetters joined in 2009. Now, some drift fishermen, frustrated with the marketing association's rules and alleged lack of transparency, want to eliminate the tax. They forced a vote on the matter, and the results are expected to be released sometime this weekend. Association board members say continuing their efforts will be impossible without the drifters' contribution. The federal government can once again continue processing H-2B visas, the program that traditionally allows foreign fish row technicians to work in Alaska seafood plants. The visa program was in limbo after a court ruling in Florida, but now a judge's decision is to hold until mid-April. Dennis Phelan of the Pacific Seafood Processors Association says that should be enough time to move this summer's visas along. His trade association represents 9 companies with about 25 Alaska processing plants. Phelan says Alaska's $100 million fish row industry depends on the H-2B visas.
There's probably only about 100 of them that we're bringing over, but it's crucial employees because they are the representatives on the ground for the folks who are buying the product, in most cases Japanese companies.
Phelan says his association is still trying to get the industry back into the J-1 visa program, which used to allow thousands of foreign students to work in Alaska processing jobs. But J-1 visas are no longer allowed for industrial work. Phelan says Alaska seafood processors now go as far as Florida in search of workers with mixed results.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their family. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game's outlook for this summer's commercial salmon season looks pretty similar to last year's in Cook Inlet. And as KDLL's Shaylin Cochran tells us, the management focus should be familiar as well.
Fish and Game expects a sockeye run to Upper Cook Inlet of 5.8 million fish, with a total harvest of nearly 4 million. Commercial Fisheries Manager Pat Shields says 2015 won't look a lot different than 2014.
That's very similar to what occurred last year, just a few hundred thousand fish different, and probably characterized as just an average run. When you look at how many fish we think could be harvested of the 5.8 million of 3.7 million to go to all the users, it should give everybody an ample opportunity to get to a sockeye this year.
Management of the commercial fisheries will again be largely dependent on what happens with the king salmon return, already expected to be low again this year. Last year was the first fishing season the department began managing under rules approved by the Board of Fish in February of 2014. There was an emphasis on paired restrictions between the sport and commercial sides. In other words, if the sport fishermen have restrictions because kings aren't coming back in big enough numbers, the commercial fleets will also face some restrictions. Shield says that will happen again this year.
Without going into the minutest of detail, the management plan, the important part says if we project less than 22,500 late-run king salmon to come back to the Kenai River, that both fisheries will go into a restriction. So we will start out this year July 1, or at least we anticipate starting out on July 1 with the sport fishery being restricted, probably to no bait, and that would mean the commercial fishery, set net fishery, would start out under a restricted fishery also of no more than 36 hours in a week and no regular Monday-Thursday period.
The department has already closed fishing for the early run of king salmon, running through the months of May and June. The late run continued its recent decline last year, falling to 16,600 fish in total. While the Kenai River sockeye return is expected to remain flat over last year, the return to the Kasilof is expected to grow by about 12% to well over a million fish. Further north, the Susitna forecast is for 276,000 fish, down about 30% over the past decade. Fish Creek is also looking at a decline of nearly 40%, or about 60,000 fish. Eastside Set gillnet fisheries will open at different times. The Kasilof section will have its first regular period on June 25th, again depending on the king salmon return to the Kenai River. The Kenai and East Foreland sections will be managed with both king and sockeye numbers in mind. The department will allow up to 51 additional hours of fishing time per week for runs between 2.3 and 4.6 million fish. There would also be a mandatory 36-hour closure per week. The department's projections come on the same day the Alaska Fisheries Conservation Alliance filed a brief with the Alaska Supreme Court about its proposal to put a ban on set netting to a voter initiative. Oral arguments will be heard later this year with a final decision to follow. AFCA wants its initiative on the 2016 ballot. The cure-all, of course, would be more king salmon. In lieu of that, though, fisheries managers will have some extra money for research. The federal government awarded disaster funds to fisheries following the king crash in 2012, and Shields says that money is still trickling down.
There will be about $1.2, $1.3 million pot of money that will be available for research, and the criteria for how that's going to be doled out has not been established yet. Yeah, we're keeping a close eye on that. We have a few things, and especially in light of the budgetary environment we're all operating in now, we have a few things that we could sure use that money on.
Part of Governor Bill Walker's proposed budget includes cutting the remainder of the $30 million King Salmon Research Project started in 2012 under the Sean Parnell administration. In Kenai, I'm Shaylin Cochran.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
The Aleutian Marketplace Contest was designed to gather ideas and provide funding for new startup businesses around the Bering Sea coast. As the competition heads into its second round, one winner is asking for extra support and a chance to turn his recipe for success into the real thing. KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal has more.
There's an old saying when it comes to business. The best ones don't just sell a product, they solve a problem. That's exactly what Unalaska-based captain Christian Laxvoss set out to do with his idea for a new kind of snack.
I really learned it from my mom. When she was doing, we call it in Iceland, fist balls. Well, that gets people here blushing. It's called Captain K Fiss Franks. But it's just like a hot dog.
Instead of beef or pork, cheap white pollock from the Bering Sea is smoked and wrapped up in casing. Laxvoss thinks it could be a hit in countries like Japan, where there's bigger demand for hot dogs and seafood on the menu. But more than a gap in dining options, Laxfoss says he's trying to address a long-running problem in the Pribilof community of St. George. There's been almost no economic activity on the island, even after the Aleutian Pribilof Island Community Development Association built a brand new fish plant.
I come there and I see that new building. And I ask them, what are they doing with it? What's in there? Nothing. I said, nothing? No, nothing at all. That little wheels up here at the top start working. And I say, I'm going to see what I can do about that.
He formulated a plan to turn the empty building into a factory and churn out fish franks. The concept took first place in the inaugural Aleutian Marketplace contest this January. Gary Chythluk helps run the competition for APICTA and the Aleut Corporation.
So from the feedback that I received from a couple of the judges, they believed that it was an innovative idea, sustainable because of use of a local resource, pollock, and also with the ability to create jobs.
For that, Laxfoss got a $1,000 check. Later in the year, judges will start evaluating detailed business plans, and the purse will increase to $20,000. But even if he won again, Laxfoss says it wouldn't be enough to get started.
With everything, because you're going to need forklifts, you're going to need freezer containers and all kinds of stuff, I would say between $1 and $2 million.
Laxfoss doesn't have that kind of money, and neither does St. George. Since the island's crab processor shut down about a decade ago, jobs have dried up and the population's dropped to just 80 people. Mayor Pat Pletnikoff says it's been tough to watch.
We're surrounded by seafoods. Unfortunately, we just don't have the ability to take advantage of those resources, and so we look to APICTA to assist us in that regard.
As a community development quota group, APICTA is meant to take some of the wealth generated by the seafood industry and direct it back into towns along the Bering Sea. Seafood franks wouldn't fix St. George overnight, but Laxfoss and Pletnikoff say they're worth some extra funding from the CDQ group.
We felt that it was important for the community because at the very least we'd get something going, and certainly it offers the prospects of expansion.
We're ready to do our part, but, you know, it has to make sense, and everybody's got to step up to the plate.
Larry Cotter is the chief executive officer for APICTA. He says the organization hasn't overlooked St. George or ruled out investment in local business. Building a new fish plant was supposed to be a step in that direction, but Cotter says there's a reason why it's never been filled.
The key to making St. George work is having a workable harbor. We currently don't have that.
The facility is vulnerable to storms and tough to access, even in good weather. Getting the harbor back in shape would cost about $30 million. Cotter says APICTA can cover a third of that price tag if the state and federal government split the rest. With such a large deficit in Alaska's budget, it's not clear when the state could make that kind of commitment. For now, APICTA will continue looking for sources of funding to repair the harbor. But Christian Laxfoss wants to move forward without it. He says it's possible to set up shop in St. George as long as he can find an investor willing to take the leap and start feeding the island's economy back to health, one franc at a time. In on Alaska, I'm Lauren Rosenthal.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KCAW's Rachel Waldholtz in Sitka, APRN's Liz Ruskin back in D.C., KDLL's Shaylin Cochran in Kenai, and KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal in Unalaska. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.